Love your neighborhood priest. He needs your firm support at least. 'Cause nobody goes celibate just for the hell of it. Won't you lend a hand to help him wrestle with his beast? Love that guy in the frock and introduce him to the new kid on the block. His God-given proclivities won't desist till he's deceased. Love your neighborhood priest. Love your neighborhood priest. The pulpit ought not be policed, 'cause you know it isn't really a case of pedophilia. It's just that there's a lamb within the flock who's gotten fleeced. Love that guy in the collar, but only if you're 4 feet tall, not any taller. His parish may be perishing, but his membership's increased. Love your neighborhood priest. And oh, you know the story about the famed parochial academy, Our Lady of the Angels Predatory, where they teach anatomy by getting all even atomy. Love your father confessor. Whatever penance he may give you, tell him yes, sir. And you may find his fingers are Roman, maybe even greased. Love that guy, he works the hood for you. Love your neighborhood, so tell him his work was good for you. Love that priest.
Hi, this is Roy Zimmerman. Listen to Inner Side Radio, because it doesn't suck.
Thank you, Roy, and welcome to the Inner Side Radio program. I'm your host, Scooter, and it is April Fool's Day. Of course, every day is April Fool's Day on this radio program. So in honor of April 1st, I'm going to play it straight for the next 30 minutes and do some journalism. I'm joined by Dan Quinn from the Texas Freedom Network. And tonight's subject is the now internationally infamous point and laugh, Texas State Board of Education, as seen on every major news network and made both Colbert and Stewart last week. For those of you hungry for your weekly dose of homegrown comedy and satire, stay tuned. If you know anything about the Texas State Board of Education, the hilarity is implied. The jokes write themselves, so this week Dan and I are going to supply you with the information. Think of it as the setup, and you, the listener, can write your own punchlines as we proceed. And please don't hurt yourself slamming your head on the desk. Hi, Dan.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. Let me introduce the Texas Freedom Network. By the way, from this point on, the Texas Freedom Network will be referred to as the TFN, which segues well into TFN.org, which is where you want to go every day. Founded in 1995, the Texas Freedom Network is a nonpartisan grassroots organization of more than 30,000 religious and community leaders. Based in Austin, the Texas Freedom Network acts as the state's watchdog, monitoring far-right issues, organization, money, and leaders. The organization has been instrumental in defeating initiatives backed by the religious right in Texas, including private school vouchers, textbook censorship, and faith-based deregulation. Texas Freedom Network is also lauded in secular, humanist, and atheist organizations throughout Texas and the United States. Dan, you wrote an article on the TFN Insider blog this afternoon that some Texas state legislators have decided to step into this mess that is the Texas State Board of Education. Could you talk about that for a minute?
Sure. In 1995, the legislature passed an education reform bill, part of which limited the State Board of Education's authority over textbook content. At that time, the state board was actually even worse than it is now. It was demanding hundreds of changes to textbooks. They were editing, you know, textbooks almost line by line in some cases, demanding pictures of women going off to work, you know, carrying a briefcase. They wanted that replaced with a woman baking a cake in the oven, more traditional values kind of photo. They wanted information about contraception stricken from health textbooks. It went on and on like that. So the legislature said, we've had enough of that. From here on out, you have to accept any textbook that's sent to you if it doesn't have any factual errors and if it meets the curriculum standards. Well, the state board spent the last 15 years doing everything they can to blow holes in that law. And in the last legislative session, the legislature decided, or some lawmakers wanted to pass more legislation that would rein their authority in even more. That went nowhere. Unfortunately, the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate, or especially the Senate, didn't want it to go anywhere, so it didn't. In the midst of the battle over social studies textbooks in Texas, or the curriculum standards, and coming right off a big battle about what kids are going to learn about evolution in science classrooms last year, a number of lawmakers have finally started to realize they're going to really have to act. If they don't, nothing's going to change with the State Board of Education here.
We'll get back to that in a minute.
Sure. So
that's
the Mexican-American Legislative Caucus met yesterday, or had a press conference yesterday, and said they are now going to call a public hearing for April the 28th, at which point they're going to call in the State Board of Education's chairwoman, Gail Lowe. They're going to call in experts, academic experts, people who've been monitoring the board over the years, and find out what in the world is going on at the State Board of Education and why in the world are they screwing over the education of Texas kids across the state.
Right, and how did we make it onto the Daily Show last week?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at some point you have to wonder, why has Texas become a laughingstock across the country?
Again.
Well, you stop wondering when you go to a State Board of Education meeting.
Well, so let's go back and look at how a voting majority of evangelical fundamentalists and homeschoolers got on the Board of Education in the first place. Let's start let's start with the mechanics. These are essentially representatives from districts throughout the state. Are these districts drawn specifically for state board elections, or are they pre-existing congressional districts? How does that work?
They are drawn every 10 years along with all the other congressional and state districts. During redistricting, there are 15 districts. They are huge. I mean, they're more than twice the size of a congressional district, because we have more than 30 congressional districts in the state. So each one has a lot of folks, covers a lot of territory typically. About half the board is up for election every 2 years, except for the first election after redistricting, in which case all of them are up. So all of them will be up
in
2012. This year there are 8 seats that are up for election.
Do these districts reflect population or geography?
A population. They're all supposed to be about the same size population-wise. In the Houston area, you have probably about 4 or 5 districts that stretch into the metropolitan area, and then a couple of them that are within the city or within the Harris County itself. So it's probably one of the more heavily concentrated parts of the state with school board districts.
Well, I promise to you that we're going to start doing a better job here at KPFT. I promise. Okay, so we've seen the LaRoucheites and other fringe groups grab local school boards, primarily because people don't have the time to pay attention. But grabbing an entire state relies on a lot more than apathy. You know, it takes financial backing. And here's a quote from a TFN report, The Anatomy of Power, Texas and the Religious Right in 2006. Quote, having spent $10 million since 1997 to help the Texas GOP take control of state government, wealthy San Antonio businessman James Leininger, is that how you say that?
Leininger.
Is now working to purge from office those Republicans who failed to support the religious right's policy agenda. In fact, with Leininger's financial support, the religious right is on the verge of finally winning a majority of seats on the State Board of Education. This was a secular prophecy from 2006. Tell us about James Leininger and how he is able to funnel money into these education campaigns. Aren't there caps, or how does that work?
No. Texas has no limits on campaign contributions for people running for state office. It's only for federal offices, and those are federal limits. So if you have a lot of money, you can spend every dime of it if you want to elect just one person or a slate of folks to office in Texas.
Because he's an individual, he can give as much as he wants. Can
That's
corporations
right.
do that as well?
Well, I think after the Supreme Court ruling, it may very well be possible. I'm not entirely sure what laws would prevent it in Texas at this point. But James Leininger made a fortune in specialty hospital beds. And in the early 1990s, he decided to essentially cut his teeth on electoral work by paying for religious right candidates to run for the State Board of Education. It began with one elected out of San Antonio, And this, you have to remember, this was always sort of the sleepy corner of state government that people really didn't pay attention to. They didn't even know we had a state board. So you could run for state board, and if you had a D after your name or an R after your name, and you ran in the district that elected Republicans or Democrats, you won. I mean, it was fairly easy to do, didn't take a lot of money. But then he began to pour literally hundreds of thousands of dollars into some races. And they would run some of the most vicious campaigns the state's ever seen. I mean, there would be an incumbent, all of a sudden she'd open up the mail, or people started getting mailers that would indicate there'd be a picture of two men shirtless or half-naked kissing. And then across the front, you know, this state board member would be accused of promoting homosexuality in the classroom, and there'd be a needle. And they'd suggest now this state board member wants to teach your kids how to shoot up drugs in the classroom. And it was just the most outrageous campaign I think you could possibly
ridiculous.
Imagine.
That's ridiculous. Needles are supposed to be for capital punishment.
Well, there you go. But in any case, this kind of scurrilous campaign won in many cases. There were quotes I recall, you know, there'd be little blue-haired incumbents on the State Board of Education who'd say, you know, I don't even talk about these kinds of things in my private life. Why in the world would I talk about them on the State Board of Education? But here they were being accused of promoting homosexuality and abortion and contraception in the classroom, and religious right candidates began to win. Over time, they built a strong core, and they always vote together. And so as their numbers grew, they had to pull very few swing votes their way to win. 2006, they finally achieved 7 of the 15 seats. And in the very next year, the governor chose one of their members to be chair of the board. They controlled the agenda. They had 7 of the 15 seats. They voted as a block. All they needed was one vote, which unfortunately sometimes was supplied by a Democrat out of San Antonio for reasons unknown to us.
But we can guess.
Yeah. He decided to start voting with them on occasion, or not voting to keep them from losing.
Right.
And they began to win a series of battles at the state board. One was the language arts curriculum in 2007. For 3 years, language arts teachers had battled, or had worked, frankly, to rewrite the curriculum standards. Curriculum specialists and teachers had. And there was a long debate, and on the very last day of the debate, at 8 in the morning, some of the religious right board members slipped under hotel room doors a heavily revised curriculum that they had put together overnight.
Midnight meetings.
Yeah. And they slipped that under the door and passed that. And teachers were sitting in the boardroom looking at each other and thinking, what in the world has just happened here?
Well, let's talk about textbook standards.
Sure.
And I mean, the mechanism of the of what's going on with textbook standards. I mean, what does that mean? And also how the state of Texas holds the United States hostage.
Sure. Well, the curriculum standards are sort of the first step in developing the textbooks. They'll create these standards, and then textbook publishers will use those standards to write new textbooks for adoption in the state. And unlike Vegas, what happens in Texas doesn't stay in Texas when it comes to textbooks. The state's population is so big, the market is so big, that we dominate decisions made on textbooks across the country.
Let me ask a question, because I've heard this repeated over and over again, but I mean, how are we not balanced out by California, which has a much larger population?
Sure. Well, for one thing, the state of Texas adopts textbooks K-12. It's a centralized adoption, so there's a lot of money on the table at the same time. In a 3 or 4 month period, you'll have hundreds of millions of dollars used to purchase textbooks. California is a centralized adoption, only K-8. High school, you sell whatever you want there, and the school districts can buy whatever they want, number one. Number two, California's not buying anything right now. They're bankrupt. So it will probably be until around 2015, 2016, before they'll actually start buying textbooks again. Well, we're still buying them here. Now, it is true when they do adopt a textbook there, there will be a few years where maybe the California textbook becomes the standard. But when Texas rolls around again, they have to create another textbook for Texas, and then that controls the market for another few years.
So the mechanism for controlling the what's inside the textbooks is by changing the curriculum around.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Once you've changed the curriculum around, see, the state board used to do this the other way. They would go in and try, and once the textbooks were submitted, they would say, we don't like this, we don't like this, we don't like this, change it. So they would try and censor the textbook after they were submitted. The legislature said in 95, you can't do that anymore. We're going to take that power away from you. So now they're going in on the front end, and what they want to do is tell publishers, before you even write your book, this is what we want the book to say. And they're very explicit about it sometimes. In 2007, the Language Arts, there was a big battle about what was going to be taught about myths and fables and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't get their way on that, fortunately. But then, as Don McElroy told, I think it was the New York Times, right after the meeting, he went to Tex-Mex lunch with some of the publishers and sat down with them and said, okay, well, this didn't pass, but this is what I want. And sure enough, we have a memo that one of the publishers sent to him later on. You know, Dr. McElroy, just want to let you know that's now in the textbooks.
Dr. McElroy is a dentist, by the way.
He is.
And he is an expert on truth decay.
Yeah, he is obviously an expert on many things. he has made many decisions to control the education of 5 million kids in the state on everything from science to language arts to now history.
So
he's probably one of the most remarkable Renaissance men that we ever had sit in a dentist chair in the state of Texas.
So you don't need to be a rocket surgeon to figure out that the school board dominated by religious fundamentalists will try to put creationism into biology classrooms.
No.
Which they did attempt, but eventually gave up. Now, I'm guessing it was because creationism in sheep's clothing, the intelligent design movement, was totally crushed in Dover, Pennsylvania, by a conservative federal judge at the end of 2005. I'm guessing that's why they gave up so easily. Am I in the ballpark on that?
Well, what happened is they realized that they couldn't have a straight-up—
couldn't win.
Beg pardon?
I mean, they could win in at the board, but they would lose in the courts.
Right. They realized that there's no way that they could have legally a requirement that students learn about creationism or about even intelligent design. So what they decided was a stealth attack. They decided they wanted to offer a number of arguments that creationists and intelligent design supporters, essentially the same thing, use against evolution all the time. They want students to learn that there are gaps in the fossil record. They want students to learn that natural selection can't possibly explain the complexity of organisms like, you know, or your eyeball.
Yeah, Behe-ism. It's to create the controversy and then ask people to teach it. You know?
That's exactly right. And so that's actually what they've now slipped into the science curriculum standards in Texas. And so we're all waiting to see what publishers will come up with when they submit their new science textbooks, probably as early as next year.
So what I found interesting about that debate is that they appointed a committee to look into the textbooks. The committee was a collection of out-of-state creationist carpetbaggers, not even from Texas, also investors in the textbook industry who stood to make millions by giving a contract to themselves.
Yeah, there were 6 so-called experts. 3 of them were mainstream academics from Texas. In fact, some of the smartest academics we have in the state, well-respected across the country.
Okay.
3 others were creationists, including one who is one of the executives at the Discovery Institute, which is an intelligent design outfit in Seattle, which has its own textbook.
Yeah, I follow those guys pretty closely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it seems that when devoted religionists drag their beliefs into civil affairs or enemy territory, as they think of it, they think they're lying for Jesus, and the end justifies the mean, and therefore corruption becomes transcendental and omnipresent.
I think the founders had it right. One of the greatest threats to liberty we have is when government gets involved in religion. They knew that.
Yeah.
That's why they separated church and state, although the state board doesn't believe that that's true. They believe separation of church and state is a myth. But that's precisely why they did it. It protects your religious freedom. It protects mine if the government will just stay out of matters of faith and leave that to congregations and families.
And this sort of corrosion of when religion meets civil society leads to the rise of secular humanism and atheist activism. I mean, how many people knew who Richard Dawkins was before we were a couple of years into the Bush administration? And John Afcroft, faith-based initiatives, revival of creationism. I mean, the whole new atheism movement is a response to events here.
Well, first of all, I think you're partly right about that, but there are a lot of polls that show that this is probably one of the most religious populations in the world. The United States is a largely religious nation, predominantly Christian. But if you talk to folks on the state board, the impression you get is that the only Christians out there are them and the folks who agree with them. Just about everybody else to them is a radical leftist who hates Christians.
Right.
And it's this really intolerant idea that unless you hold the same worldview that they do on everything, then you are somehow an apostate.
The people that they're taking off the most are other religionists, you know, because...
That's precisely right.
Yeah.
Precisely right.
Because
I mean, the founders were brilliant. They knew what they were doing at the time. The minute that you have government picking and choosing which religious faith to promote, you've got a conflict. And unfortunately, that's what the state board's playing with right now.
Americans are conditioned to expect attacks on Charles Darwin. But when the current board went after Thomas Jefferson, boom, Texas Board of Education, national news.
And yeah, I'll tell you, that even surprised us. I mean, we knew the ideological mindset, of course, of the board. But when Cynthia Dunbar, who's from down your way, offered the proposal to strike him from a world history standard on important Enlightenment thinkers who've influenced political revolutions since the 1700s, even we were shocked.
I have a theory on that.
Go ahead.
Thomas Jefferson was really outspoken on the subject of religion. So you can, if you want to know what he thought, he wrote about it extensively. And he even rewrote the entire New Testament and removed every element of spiritualism and supernaturalism, leaving Jesus Christ as an historical figure with some good ideas, a philosopher, in other words. That puts a huge crack in the fundamentalist claims that we live in a Christian nation founded by Christians, which is nonsense. If you read historical works, the founders were primarily deists who believed God created the universe but hasn't interceded since. Madison, Adams, Franklin, Washington, not to mention Thomas Paine, who was an anti-theist. So it's no wonder you would want to direct attention away from Jefferson because his writings were the most extensive. Once people start asking themselves, what's a deist? Then that is pretty much going to overthrow the way that they want us to see history in the United States.
Well, and also remember that, you know, Jefferson argued that a wall of separation between church and state was essential to liberty. And in a standard that teaches students about important thinkers who've influenced people struggling for freedom around the world, if you're a Christian fundamentalist, do you really want one of those people to be Thomas Jefferson? Probably not. They replaced him, by the way, with John Calvin and Thomas Aquinas. I mean, these jokes really do write themselves.
I know that we're letting the listeners write them. Yeah, I mean, I could be throwing all kind of polemics in here, but I'm doing journalism tonight.
Yeah.
Well, let's just throw out a few names. How about the new comedy team of Barton and Beck?
Yeah, that was fascinating. Chris Rotta wrote a piece for Huffington Post today that talked about Barton joining Glenn Beck on Beck's American Revival tour around the country, in which apparently she discusses one scene in which during this huge revival at an auditorium in Florida, an elderly woman falls ill, at which point Glenn Beck asks for the lights to come up, for medical help to come to this woman, and then begins to hum Amazing Grace, at which point the rest of the crowd joins in with him. I suppose the message, as Chris notes, is that, you know, a liberal fascist Nazi probably would never have cared about this woman being ill in the audience, and so let's all be great Americans.
Well, give us a little background on Barton, though.
David Barton was named a few years back by Time Magazine as one of the 25 most influential evangelicals in the nation. He heads an organization based near Fort Worth. It's called Wall Builders. Essentially, he argues that the separation of church and state's a myth. He has a bachelor's degree in religious education from Oral Roberts University, and yet is portrayed by his supporters as this great historian. He has no more credentials in history than I do, and I took a couple of classes in college, so I think I'm probably a little bit farther along. He has been appointed as an expert, quote, expert reviewer of the social studies standards. The board put him on there to help advise both the board and the curriculum writers about which way to go. Well, of course, that's one of the reasons why we're going the direction we're going right now. He's argued that there is no separation of church and state. He's argued to take out important figures like Cesar Chavez and Thurgood Marshall, claiming that they're not significant figures in history and poor role models. Unfortunately for him, the state board got too much flack for that, and Chavez and Marshall are still in the standards. He also argued that the standards should tell students that George Washington was saved by a divine miracle in the French and Indian War, which, of course, is a perfectly appropriate faith belief if it's yours, but it's certainly not something that you teach in a public school history class. He's probably one of the most influential Republican evangelicals out in the country right now. He's essentially sort of given them the language to use in promoting a fundamentalist Christian ideological agenda in the Republican Party. You see a lot of his handiwork in the Republican Party platform in Texas, which, you know, denounces the idea of separation of church and state, for example. He has been very influential at the national level as well. In 2004, the Republican National Committee hired him to go around the country recruiting conservative evangelicals into the party to support George Bush's reelection campaign.
Now, let me ask you a question because we're running out of time. A lot of these people that are on the board have already been voted off and they're lame ducks, or, I mean, aren't
they? Some of them have. Don McElroy lost his race for reelection in the Republican primary on March the 2nd.
But he's still on the board, right?
He will be on the board until January.
So this is a last-minute ditch effort to just, like, slam as much stuff through as they can.
Yes, that's pretty much the case. And we have to put up with this probably until the end of the year. Now, that's the deal about the Mexican-American Legislative Caucus. They are firing a shot across the bow saying, if you do not listen to us, if you do not pull back from this ideological jihad, we're going to cut you off at the knees. I mean, that was sort of the hidden or the more subtle message yesterday. Remember that the legislature, they said, we decide how much money is going to be there to buy textbooks. We're the ones who decide what kind of power you're going to have over curriculum and textbooks. So it'll be very interesting to see what the reaction is from state board members at this hearing. In the past, they've thumbed their nose at the legislature. It'll be interesting to see if they do so again.
And it's also interesting that when I talk to Mexican people from Mexico, they are amazed at how much overlap there is in church and state here compared to there. I mean, they have managed to pretty much eliminate that in Mexico. So.
Yeah. The one thing to know about this press conference that was yesterday in the hearing is this won't just be Malk, for example. There will be a number of lawmakers from a variety of ethnic backgrounds and concerns who are coming to this. So while Malk was very interested in how Latinos are being treated in the standards, which is not very well, they're also very interested in a lot of the other things going on, the ideological agenda that the board's pushing.
Okay, we got to go. Talking with Dan Quinn from the Texas Freedom Network. That's tfn.org. It's always great reading. You guys do a great job, and everybody loves y'all.
Well, thanks
me.
So much.
So we thank you for everything you're doing, and hang in there, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, take
thanks,
care.
Dan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Inner Side Radio with me, Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
People all complain.